Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thanks for the explanation. And I think that's it.
Okay, with any of those, does anyone else have any other corrections, additions, deletions?
Emily, do you want the truck RFP on this one? I circulated that
I
around
think
earlier.
I saw that, and I think we should put it there somewhere. Let's put it after soil compaction studies approval so that Jimmy might still be there.
Sounds good to me.
Is that all right with everyone else?
Sounds good.
Yep. Good.
Okay. So I need a motion to accept this agenda with corrections. I'll make that motion. Will someone second it?
Okay.
And all those in favor say aye. Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
And myself, aye. So, items for discussion, approval, recurring items, approval of 5-4 and 5-20 minutes. Has anyone got any questions, corrections, or discussion regarding those minutes?
I do, Emily, on the May 20th one.
Yep.
Under Dan Maxim's driveway permit.
Yep.
It states in there, ledge does not pose a problem, but that's kind of unknown as we speak right now.
So you would like that taken out?
Well, I mean, I would take it out or say that, you know, if the access were adequate and, you know, doesn't have ledge and he can get his line, his 20 feet back or something like that.
Okay.
And then the other one still in that one is a culvert needs to be replaced, but it's really the one that goes across the road that we're thinking about just taking out. And then it goes on to say that Maxim replacing the 18-inch culvert. He'd be putting in his access culvert. He would not be doing the culvert that goes across the town road.
I wondered about that as well. Can you change those, Cindy, before the minutes are adopted? Cindy must be there somewhere.
Yes, I can. Yes.
Thank you, Cindy. Are there any other corrections?
I've got a couple of small ones. Going back to a comment earlier, it really under 5A, it should be the road foreman's report, not the road commissioner report. It would also be good to include in reference to the grader, and Jimmy, since you're here, rather than saying we should specify what that part was, because I know it wasn't an important part and there was only one left that we voted to secure, but it'd be good just to mention what that part was, especially since it's a $2,700 part. And I think under 5B3 on windrowing, I can't remember if we voted on that or not, or if we just agreed by consensus, but we recall that we had a board discussion about it and that the board came to a collective agreement on the windrowing. Just kind of a minor issue further down in the minutes under 5K, the dog issue. I think we have to be careful about statements where we say something is a direct violation of our dog ordinance. And it's probably better to call it the dog ordinance than a leash law, because it's more than a leash law. But we should be careful about making a statement that there were violations, because as with any ordinance, there's a process in place to determine whether there is an actual violation. And we did not go through the full process to determine if someone did in fact violate the ordinance. So we just need to be careful about making statements where saying that there's a violation of an ordinance. Because we didn't...
Anyone else have any other corrections?
It may be true, but we didn't make a finding that there was a violation.
Any other corrections? I need a motion.
So moved.
Second.
I need a sec. All those in favor, Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Minutes are approved.
Could I? What is the part for the grader? Does anybody know what that's called?
Jim, what was that part?
Yeah, that would have been the valve bank for the wing. So where all the wing controls hook into it, it's the valve bank.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Okay, those are approved. And so we have warrants for approval. We have the following warrants. 19, I'll make a motion just because I've got them written down here. I move that we approve warrant 19117 in the amount of $29,050.47. And a payroll warrant of 19116 of $6,097.17.
Second that.
Both of these warrants were sent to you just a couple days ago by Ellen. Were there any questions or concerns on those warrants? I'm assuming that silence means there are no questions. Is that correct?
No questions here.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Are you ready to vote on that then?
Join Dr. Sanjay Gupta. We truly are all in this together for CNN.
Okay. All those in favor of that motion for the two warrants, pay warrants, signify by saying aye. Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Okay, moving on. Jimmy, you're up for your report.
All right. So we're still grading away and been still ditching and picking it up. Still kind of a slow process, but we're getting closer towards being able to move on towards Allen Hill and Webster Hill and doing that. I've called to get a skid steer, hopefully, to sweep off the aprons. And that was $294 a day, and we'll get it done in a day. D&D started bringing the sand. We ended up being the first ones on the list with them, so they were quite sure that we would have our sand all trucked to us before the 1st of September, because I told them we really needed it by then. So hopefully that'll work. I got to have some rake teeth. I do know I've called around and got a price on them, and the best right now is $1,875, and I got to have 52 of them. And it comes close to $1,000. The rake is, they're worn down pretty good. I can wait until July if I have to, but I really count on that rake. So I guess I'm looking to see if it'd be okay if I went ahead and ordered $1,000.
Getting a lot of background noise from somebody. It'd be good for folks to mute themselves if they're not speaking.
Are you still there, Jimmy?
I am. Yeah, I was just waiting for that noise to kind of clear up a little bit. And then Ellen had sent an email out, just a reminder on the wastewater separator. It's getting close towards its time to be pumped out. And I guess the last time they did it was around 4,000 bucks. So I think we have to bear that in mind, that we will be having to do that. moving forward. And the other question I have is what was the reasoning of why the town does not have a dumpster at the town garage? Does anybody recall on why there isn't?
I recall when I was there, Art saying that neighbors were using it, but that could be solved with a lock.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got some advantages on having a dumpster down there, because as it is now, I mean, we didn't get enough trash even for like green up day, let's say. We got, I don't know what there was, 10 or 12 bags in there or whatever, but it doesn't warrant enough to take it down. If we had the dumpster, we got to pay now to get rid of it anyway. If we had the dumpster out back, there's quite a few other items that we wouldn't have to worry about tripping over and kicking down inside that shop if we had the dumpster to get rid of it. So
would you like to look into that and see what's available and what size you might want?
Yep, I would. Yeah, I can do that.
Is the rest of the board in agreement with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then the only other thing.
And I think Jimmy should go ahead and get his rake teeth. I mean, if at all possible, you got a lot of grading between now and the 1st of July.
I agree.
Yeah, I do too.
There should be money in the budget for rake teeth, isn't there, Jimmy?
Yeah, there's money in there, but knowing that the budget, you know what I mean, and the way things are working, that I
right.
just, it's easier right. for me right now to make sure everybody's above board with it before I sure. just don't do anything of that, because right. I'm watching it, trying to be cautious about it as well.
Right. Yep. That's a good call.
And I would agree that you should get the rake teeth and check on the dumpster both.
Okay. And then the only other thing that I do have is, I know a while ago I mentioned about the radios, a few issues we've got. Have you made any progress with that?
I sent an email and then I never followed up, so I will check on that and I will get a hold of them.
Okay.
It'd just be a matter of getting them to come out and reprogram them. So I'm sure they can do it. Do you know, are all of the channels used in the highway bank, or is there an extra one in there, one you would, could, because they'll have to use one of those 16 channels in that highway bank to use it as a scan channel. So
okay.
I'm not sure what's in there without having one, but.
Okay, so I guess I'm not 100% sure really what's in there. I know they wrote them all down, so
yeah.
Take a look at that and then I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
That'll work for you.
Yep, that'll work.
Perfect. And then that was pretty much it with me, other than a little bit of discussion on how well, but that's coming up anyway.
Speaking of the radios, now that there's leaves on the trees, how are they working?
They're right now it seems like there's some dead spots with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's scratch. Some of them are scratchy and the grader, for some unknown reason, is just, I've tried everything under the sun and they can talk to me and I can be beside them. I can be 100 feet away from it. It don't matter. I can't get out on it at all. And I don't know why.
Yeah. There was an issue with that. We should, when they're over, have them look at that. Even when it was just vehicle to vehicle, the grader had issues. So I don't know if it's an antenna or a radio issue, but, I know sometimes location, if it's near other electronics, can play an issue. So yep. We should have, remember that when they're over and have them look at that.
Yep. That's it for me. Unless somebody's got something else for me.
Anybody have any questions before we get on to Howe Hill project?
No, thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, Howe Hill project. John and Jimmy, I guess this is a joint effort. John's here, I assume. Is he, John?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, so here. You and Jimmy better give us an update of how we're doing and what's going on.
Okay. So you know, as you probably have noticed, they're moving right along with progress on Howe Hill. The culverts are essentially finished. The road's been reclaimed, and this week Pike has been laying down the dense graded material in the designated locations on the plans. And they're still working on the head walls and ditching. Overall, I'd say things are going well. We did have some concerns last week during the reclaiming. We were finding larger pieces of asphalt in the reclaimed base that just the reclaimer missed. And some areas going up the hill from like Robbins up to where Brooks Y driveway is, maybe a little bit lower where they actually missed a few strips of pavement along the edge of the road. And with the reclaimer, we had a meeting with Pike last Thursday on site and with Frank Rogers and Jimmy and Horizons and Pike was there, and we discussed it and came to a plan to resolve the issue tomorrow. So tomorrow they're going to be grading that hill from Robbins up to the top there, and we're going to have Jimmy and myself will probably be there inspecting that to make sure they get all the asphalt pieces out of the road. I don't think it's as bad as we thought it was initially. They were having the same issue in Sharon. It was a few isolated locations. They already graded that. And I didn't see any, during my inspections over there, I didn't see any big pieces once they got the few that were there out of the base. So that's, that's something we're going to be looking at tomorrow during the, when they're working on it. Other than that, things seem to be going well. We're trying to keep on top of the quantities to make sure they're not going over on the dense graded. They're doing computerized load tickets so we can tell when the trucks come in and kind of keep track of measuring everything to make sure their quantities aren't going haywire. Other than that, I think things are overall going well. I did get a change order from Pike just like an hour ago or now a couple hours ago. I haven't had a chance to look at it. That was the formal request for the additional money for the culverts and a few other things were in there. They sent it to Jim and myself. So I don't think we're prepared to discuss it tonight. I think we got to review it and talk as necessary, talk with Pike about it, and maybe bring it up at the next meeting for consideration. I think that's about all I had. Is there anything you think of, Jim?
No, not really. I mean, I think that the board needs to know that some of the concern and the issues that we had last week was the workmanship end of it. And I really feel that watching them lately, they seem to be doing a better job, Pike does, on taking care of their stop happiness that really irritated me. And I feel that they're meeting what I wanted to ask of them. So things are better there.
Yeah, they've been pretty responsive lately. I guess initially I would ask them for certain things and I wouldn't get a response. And, this change order, for example, I thought I would get this like 2 weeks ago. the superintendent is overall, he's good. He's just younger and probably – he runs the grader a lot and runs the water truck and runs all the other stuff. So sometimes he's hard to get a hold of. That's my only concern, I guess, that I had. Yep. But like you said, Jim, I think lately they've been doing good.
And I know the chunks, as far as the chunks go, we went down there, me and Emily talked about it. And so I went down and below Brooks's Junior's driveway where there was always like a little pucker mark that came up. And so we dug a trench down through there. I don't know, we went down 2.5-3 feet there. And we did find one pocket of a bunch of rock piled up in there and everything right at that spot. So I believe we found that problem, but there was no chunks in any of that where we were digging. It was ground up very nice. So to have them say that, in like you're saying, it was those two spots, I think that's fair to say.
And yeah, and keep in mind, and they're reclaiming down 8 inches and the pavement's about 4 inches thick. So chances are the chunks are going to be on the top when they're trying to grade it. So, you know, the idea tomorrow when they're going to windrow that hill there, and we'll be able to see them come up, you know, when they're grading, I think. So yeah, I think it was just mainly that hill there. Maybe it's cause it was windy or whatever, but they missed a few sections right along the edge there. And the other thing is when the pavement's broken up like it was alligatored, and not like firmly in place, it'll bounce around like a rototiller, like a rock bounces around in a rototiller. That's what happens. So, I mean, it's pretty typical on a broken road. I found out that it can happen. But I think they're addressed. I think we can address it.
And they're generally ahead of schedule, it sounds, right?
Yeah, their completion date is August 1st or the 15th?
15th.
So, yeah, I mean, they're way ahead of, they're way ahead of where we might anticipate. You know, it's only June, and they're going to be paving next week. So,
how far ahead roughly are they?
Well, I mean, we didn't really have a firm schedule other than the completion date. I mean, I think the contract said they were going to start doing the road work on June 1st. And here we are it's June 3rd. The culverts were done in May basically, and they've been moving right along. They didn't really start on the road until like late May. We're like 2 months till completion date, and they'll probably be like a month and a half at the rate they're going. They'll probably be done in late June or so. So that's like a month and a half ahead of where the completion date was.
Okay.
Yeah.
The weather's really been in their favor.
Yes, for sure.
I had Ellen send that Pike bill, the first one that she received, to you, John, and to you, Jimmy, because I assume you need to verify the quantities and stuff that they are billing us for. And I assume you want to keep track of that before she pays that bill. And is that the case?
Yes, I did get that from Ellen, and I did respond. I don't know if you've seen that yet or not, Emily. I did find some stuff, questions that I had in their invoice. For example, they had invoiced the town some hard pack under the hard pack item, but it really should have been the restoration of surfaces, which is the lump sum. And there were a few other loads of dense graded that were unaccounted for. I'm not sure what they used those for. So, but anyway, I had a list of comments that I gave back to Ellen.
Well, before we pay those bills, we need to have an agreement on each of those bills. We need to know where that stuff went, where it was supposed to go, and if it all came in, and if you've got the load slips and stuff so that you know that it came here. And so that [S2] Right. [S1] Was kind of part of your scope of services. And I certainly have no way of knowing, and I'm not going to sign off on it until you do, and or Jimmy, because I have no idea.
Right.
None of us as a board is watching how many loads are going in there or getting those reports from them. It's the only way we're going to keep Pike honest is to keep track of those things, and I'm sure that's what you're doing.
Yes, we are.
Trying to do,
yeah. And they, I mean, how it should work, I think, is they should be submitting their application of payment for me to me first, so I can verify everything, and then that would go to you, so you're not having to bounce it back to me.
Maybe you could get them to do that, and then yeah. Tell them that they might get paid a little sooner if it didn't bounce around to several locations.
Yeah, I will certainly let Bobby know tomorrow. Ask him to do it that way.
Well, then you've got all the information there.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So.
Anything else we need to discuss until we get to soil compaction studies? Anybody?
Nope.
Okay, John, what happened with your soil compaction studies?
So Sharon's doing this with M&W Soils. So they come and they have a new gauge and they test the compaction of the Friday they came and tested the compaction of the reclaimed base to ensure it's an independent compaction test on behalf of the town, so for quality assurance. So they were here like a half a day for both towns. Really didn't take very long. And what that does is just assures the town that they're getting the compaction they want in the contract as per the plan. The proposal would be for them to come back when they're paving and do some compaction tests on the pavement itself. Pike is supposed to be doing their own QC work. This is independent of what Pike's doing. So M&W sent a letter to the select board, I think, or not kind of a informal proposal, just to let you know what the scope would be and the cost and everything. And I think their cost for the compaction test on the reclaim was estimated at $500 to $1,000. And then for the pavement, it was $1,000 to $2,000, and it would more likely be closer to $1,000, I think is what he said in the letter there. So I would recommend doing it just because it's compaction is very important. It extends the life of your roadway, and you want to make sure you're getting that good compaction there. And it really, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's a good bang for your buck to get that work done. M&W Soils has done work with the town before, I believe. They did the borings up there. They're a good outfit. We work with them quite a bit. So I don't know if you've seen the letter that M&W sent. I can forward it. Or did I think I sent that to you, didn't I, Emily? Or?
Yes, you did, back 2 or 3 weeks ago. So what the board needs to do here is we need to authorize, because this project is moving so fast, I told John to schedule the compaction, and we'd get approval for the compaction studies on the reclaim surface tonight. That being said, Pike wanted to start bringing in material on Monday, and M&W came on Friday. You're estimating, John, that that's going to cost about $500, right?
Yes, yep. Based on what they've done so far.
So I told him to go ahead, and it was under this limit of getting three prices and all of that. But we really need to backpedal a bit and approve that expenditure. And we had discussed it before, but we also need to approve an expenditure to have them do the compaction studies on the pavement. Yeah. My personal feeling is that it's going to, it's our way of trying to keep Pike honest and make sure things are, we're getting what we're supposed to be getting. But I need, so we can discuss that and someone can make a motion to that effect, or we can decide not to do that if you want. But because I, because of the time frame thing and this project is moving much faster than we anticipated, we've already spent the $500, and that's on my, that was on my authorization because it's moving too fast. So we need to discuss whether you want to do those other compaction studies as well and where you want to go from there.
Can we I don't have any issue with what we're about to, sounds like what we're about to vote on, but it's not the first time stuff like this has come up, and I'm wondering whether we want to not necessarily, I'm not sure how to handle this, but, you know, it's sort of part and parcel to projects of this nature and projects of this complexity where you've got these little things that come up that where expenditures need to be authorized. And I'm kind of wondering if there's a way to sort of pre-authorize this stuff so that we're not doing stuff on the back end.
Well, I think that would be a very wise choice. I felt, I personally didn't think, when John emailed me and we discussed it through email, I said, schedule the thing for after Wednesday night. Do you need a special meeting? And John said, no, things were okay. And I thought that, I thought that we could, he could schedule it for after this Wednesday. We could authorize it. If we didn't authorize it, then we wouldn't do it. And it would still be scheduled. But you see, Pike is coming along and moving so fast, that wasn't an option. And so John had it done. I personally think it was a good thing to have done, especially with the big pieces of pavement and one thing and another. That being said, we do need to, I don't feel comfortable doing this on a regular basis either. Mm-hmm. I would have called a special meeting had I known that they were going to show up on Friday. We could have had a special Zoom meeting and it wouldn't have been a big deal. But I thought, I didn't realize that this was going to happen last Friday either. Right. I'm still glad that they did it. I think it's important to make sure we have a surface. And any way that you can come up with a pre-authorization for a small amount of money, I'm game for. I would feel much more comfortable that way as well.
Yeah. Well, I guess my thoughts on this are, one, this kind of sounds like cheap insurance to me. Because
if
we find out after the fact that the compaction wasn't done right, that's going to be highly problematic. But in terms of I would almost imagine that, you know, like maybe a couple of $1,000s and we can always keep it current, you know, every couple of weeks if we need to reauthorize it. But basically something to the effect of somewhere in the range of a couple of $1,000s, give John and Jim the latitude to kind of make these calls on the fly when things like this are needed. And if it's going to go above that amount, then it needs to come back to the board, you know, something along those lines.
Why don't you make a motion to that effect?
Okay. I'll just spitball it here, 'cause I'm not really sure, but I'll move that we authorize miscellany expenditures such as this up to an amount totaling $2,000 from starting tonight, and give John and Jim the authority to make those expenditures. And also that if they feel like there's a decision that needs to come back to the board, that they can bring it back to the board, but to authorize the expenditure up to that amount.
I'll second
that. Is there a second? Any more discussion on that?
You think that's all enough? Is that enough? $2,000?
For little stuff like this, and I would think that anything more than 2,000, we might want to give some thought to it, you know?
Okay. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars overall, and I'm just sort of wondering.
But that's fine with me. Yeah, we can always revisit it if it turns out it's not enough.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you also said you would kind of look at it in a couple of weeks to keep it current.
Exactly.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Any other discussion on that motion? All those in favor, Chuck?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. I would also like to make a motion that we authorize the pre-spent $500 plus or minus that M&W did for the compaction studies on the graded surface, the reclaimed surface, and also an additional up to $1,000 to do compaction studies on the pavement when it is applied.
I'll second that motion, but a clarifying question. Was that $500 included in the warrants we approved earlier?
I do not believe there has been an invoice yet.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure we're not double voting.
I didn't see it there, but I did not see anything from NW Soils, but I read those a little while ago, so I could be wrong, but I don't believe so.
I haven't received anything from them.
Okay, good enough. I just want to make sure we're not.
Thank you, Ellen. So is there a second for that motion?
Second. I second that.
Yeah, Scott did, actually. You're right.
Thank you. Any discussion on that? All those in favor, Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. Very good. Anything else that you need authorization for, John or Jim, regarding the Howe Hill project?
I'm all set for now.
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
And we will. Thank you, John, for coming. We appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
And
thank you.
You're welcome.
Next on the agenda is the truck RFP that, Steve sent around just before the meeting.
Actually, Emily, don't we have financial issues on, or did we cover that?
No. Yes, we do. That has really nothing to do with John, and John and Jimmy can stay if they like. We've got to figure out where we're going to, if they're going to get done before the 1st of July, we need to do a little figuring out as to where we're going to pull this money from. Ellen has had a conversation with Chad Hewitt regarding how we might handle this, and I hope that she will give us some input from Chad. But in other words, we were counting on $300,000 in next year's budget. This project is going to be done before we get that money in, even the first tax payment. Also, I received a letter the other day from V-Trans that although we have the grant money and at some point they will reimburse us, that being said, they have no idea when that reimbursement will come. And so we need to have come to some mind as to how we're going to handle the payment of Pike. And that really doesn't, that's just a financial issue. It really doesn't have anything to do with what the bill is. It's just we got to figure out how we want to handle paying for them. So the truck RFP can come afterwards. I thought maybe Jimmy would want to participate with that discussion.
All right, I see what you mean then. Yeah, that's fine. If Jimmy, not to hold Jimmy up.
Well, he gets up early in the morning, and if he wants to stay, that's fine. But no. If he wants to leave, I'm sure he wants to make some input with the truck RFP. So
yeah, that's fine. I'm just
Steve and Jimmy and John, you're on.
Okay, so the RFP that I sent around earlier, it's the same RFP as we approved last year. Just changed the dates, and I put in the specs that we changed on the truck last year. So it should be the truck specs that we need.
Is the scraper blade stuff taken out of that?
Out of this current RFP?
Yeah.
No.
No. Do we want that in there?
I would prefer it in there.
Okay.
We've had some amendments since the RFP was initially published. Are the amendments also captured in here?
For the most part, yep. I believe so.
Okay.
Yep. The only thing that I know for sure that I didn't change was the seat, but I wanted to talk with the dealer that to make sure that that seat option that we got last year is still valid for this year. I thought those were kind of a special seat that those guys were able to get, but that's the only thing that I know that I didn't specify in there this go around.
So I'm just reading through the RFP. Is the idea to swap out the scraper blade that's on the Western Star now?
No, you would let that go with that truck because they found that it's really not wide enough to do the job that you need to, that it should be doing.
Yep.
This one's a 10 and the 11 foot does a lot better job.
There's language in here that says the truck will need to accommodate our current underbody scraper that is currently on our 2015 four-wheel drive Western Star.
Okay, so I will make that change.
Okay.
I wondered if and Jimmy, this is maybe you should put some input into this. There was some discussion as to whether it was wise to keep the plow and wing and move them from one vehicle to another for one round, or whether it was wise to ship them with the truck and you'd get more money for the truck that way. Do you have any thoughts on that?
The only thought that I have is, yes, you're right. I think you get more for it to send the plow and the wing together as a unit. That's why in this one here, if memory serves right, I know me and Steve talked about it, that this one here, the other two, the plows are staying with us, but this one here, we were going to send the plow out, which would be not specifically the one that's with this truck because it's a fairly new plow for the Western Star. We keep it, but we take one of the older ones and ship that oldest one that is in the fleet, you know what I mean, and replace it with a new one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind
of, I just want
to look through what's there now.
That makes sense.
Also, go ahead, Scott.
Steve, one thing I would recommend, especially since it's hard to predict the future right now, under 544, it says electronic bids will not be accepted. We should probably accept electronic bids right now. We could make the option to either hand deliver or send electronically.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yep.
There down in your RFP a ways, Steve, you've missed changing a couple of dates from 2019 to 2020. You'll want to proofread that, and I can't remember just exactly where that was, but it was quite a ways down in the document.
Okay.
So that you've got 2020 on them. And other than that, I didn't see any problem with it, but I don't know big truck specifications, so I probably wouldn't know them anyway. Okay. So do we want to send this truck RFP out now and get this process rolling? If we do that, we will probably not have a truck until next summer, fall anyway. Is that not correct, guys?
That sounds like it's where we would be. Mid to late summer, maybe even early fall next year.
Mm. Wow.
So do we want to get this thing proofread and ship it out the door? And if so, we need a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Second.
I'll second that. Any more discussion? All those in favor, Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Okay, I just then proofread it and send it out the door.
Okay.
Now we're down to financial issues. And the problem is that we do not have the $687,000 at our disposal right now to pay Pike. And it looks to me like, and I don't know whether Jimmy's still here or not, but it looks to me like they're going to get done about the 1st of July or maybe even sooner. And so I had Ellen talk to Chad as to whether we could borrow from reserve funds or other things, other vehicles, to pay the bills and still remain solvent, or whether we would have to go and borrow money from a bank. And Ellen, if you're there, are you willing to share what advice and or input Chad gave you?
Sure. He said that it's a very routine thing for many towns to keep most of their money in a sweep account, which I was in the process of doing. So we don't have a lot of so many towns do not have CDs the way we do. So my plan was that as all these CDs came due, I would redeem them and put the money into a reserve sweep. Mascoma is paying 0.75%, which is better than a lot of the CDs I have right now. And then the town would have that amount of money sitting in its coffers and essentially would be lending itself the money to be able to cut the checks to pay the bills. And then when the money comes back, when we get our grant money from the state or taxes are forthcoming, then we essentially replenish those funds.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the obligation still stands. So whatever cash is used to fund the project, the obligations to any other reserve funds that aren't being funded, those obligations would stay. So I wouldn't see any problem with that.
Anybody else have any input?
But Ellen, does that get us there? I mean, what you're describing, does that get us the amount of cash we would need to pay the bills?
Well, at first, when you were talking about the truck, I was a little nervous about that because I was thinking, yikes, I've got to figure out that there's money to buy the truck as well as money to do the paving. And there's about $87,000 in the paving reserve as it is. There is $200,000 that's to go into the paving reserve this month for the appropriation for this fiscal year. And there's the rainy day fund.
There's also $90,000 that is coming out of
the surplus fund from balance. Past years. So, and as I said, there are CDs that are coming due that I'm redeeming to make sure we have that money there. And I will take a closer look at it and send something around the next time I'm in the office.
Okay, but it sounds like we're generally kind of there. One thing I would ask though is, I recall when we structured the RFP for this project, I'll have to go back and reread it, but I thought we put some explicit language in the RFP that said, knowing that we weren't going to have some cash until after the start of the fiscal year, that we wouldn't pay some of the bills until after the fiscal year. And I don't recall whether we did in fact put that language in the RFP and what that language, how that language reads. But if we did in fact put that in there, just because Pike's ahead of schedule doesn't mean we necessarily can't pay on the schedule that we put in the RFP. It just depends on what language mm-hmm. was put in the RFP.
Even if we don't pay anything until after the beginning of the fiscal year,
right,
get taxes in until the 15th of August, Pike isn't going to wait that long for their money.
No, I understand. I understand.
The language may have been there and it may not, and I can't say for sure. I do not recall one way or the other. But the fact of the matter is Pike is going to expect to get their money before we get taxes in, and the $300,000 that was going to come out of this coming year's budget is not going to be there until tax payments come in. And that's where almost half of the expenditure is going to come from. And so I felt it was prudent to figure this out ahead of time rather than at the last minute, oh my gosh, there's no money in the bank. What do we do now? And I think having a conversation now and having a plan is a much better way to go. Kevin Rice, when I spoke to him about they're talking about a truck again. And I said, right now we don't have enough money to pay for the paving. He said, well, you can always borrow money out of the large equipment sinking fund for the fire truck as long as you put it back. And of course he doesn't have control over that money anyway, but at least the thought was there. Anyway, I think that if Ellen gives us some more current figures, as long as we're thinking about this, I think we'll be okay. But it's a conversation I thought we should have.
Sure. I think it's not so much borrowing money from one, because we have to be careful, I think, how we say it. I don't think we're so much borrowing money from one reserve and lending it to another. It's really just this notion that there's a pool of cash out there. And on the books, you've got these obligations that exist. And the thing that matters from a financial and a legal standpoint is that those obligations continue to hold, but the cash itself can shift around. And I kind of think that's what Ellen is saying, is that.
That is exactly correct.
Yeah.
But
we're not really lending money from one reserve account to the other. We're really just taking available cash and using it for other purposes.
That's correct. Any more discussion on the financial things? Okay. Letter to dog owners. I sent to you just this evening the letter that I wrote to Jen Hewitt up at Highland Farm when all the dogs were causing problems up there. To be quite honest, I have not had time to do individual letters to the owners that have had the concerns on Bartlett Brook Road. But I think that if we tailored a letter to each of the three dog owners that had dogs that were just out all day causing ruckuses, or dogs that were menacing to runners, and or the dog that jumped in the road and scared the horses, that I think if we tailored that kind of a letter to each of those individuals, that would be one way to go about it. The other way is to, we can write a letter to the town of Pomfret and say, remind them that there is a leash law. If we choose to do that, we could just write up Bartlett Brook Road people if we wanted to. I was looking for some input as to what you all wanted to do.
So I read the letter, and it's addressed to Jen, and I think that
Well, I understand that was addressed to Jen. I pulled that out. That was the letter that I wrote. The circumstances are different. The bottom line is, as far as I'm concerned, is we do have a dog ordinance, and whether we deem that those dogs that were cited in the complaints that we got were indeed dogs at large, I think if there were no owners there and they were not taking care of them and they were not on the property, they were in the road menacing people, they were dogs at large. And that's quite clear in the ordinance. And the reason I sent that letter to you all was the citing of the ordinance and that particular item in the ordinance. That is where these owners, if they're leaving their dogs out all day long and they're all gone to work, that's the same thing that was happening up at Highland Farm. In one instance, the person, the jogger that turned around and went home or went back up the road, he felt the dog was menacing. No one was there at that particular location, and the dog was just left out. And on the third occasion, I guess the owners were there but weren't paying attention. So I think that it would be, my personal feeling is, it would be wise to remind the dog owners that there is a dog ordinance, that dogs that are not on a leash and are not under control, which none of these dogs appeared to be, but that's a judgment call, are dogs at large, and that's not acceptable. And
yeah.
I would hope that a letter addressed to the three individuals, no finding of wrongdoing, but just reminding them that this is the situation and this is what the dog ordinance says. And if indeed your dogs are running around all day with no supervision, you're in violation. And it seemed to, no one has complained about Highland Farm anymore once we sent that letter. And so, but I'm game to let anybody else write a letter. It's fine. I don't have any strong feelings one way or another. I don't have to write my letter. But we need to get a letter to those three dog owners because the road is there for everyone. It's not just there for the cars that go up and down the road.
Yeah.
It's there for the hikers and the joggers and all of those people that consider these back roads a recreational item.
Yeah.
I made some quick changes to it that I can, it's in SharePoint, but I can send it around. I would share it, but you won't be able to see it, Emily. So.
Well, okay. That would be great. And anybody else that has any suggestions?
Yeah, I've got some suggestions on this. So I think in general terms, the letter to each of the people who are, that it should be, the letter should be sent to, we need to describe factually what happened. So there needs to be, on this date, we got a report of XYZ, this is what happened, just so it's in the record what happened. And then there needs to be, I think you're right about this, Emily, there needs to be the town of Pomfret has a dog ordinance, and here's the relevant portion of the dog ordinance, just as you put in the letter. And then basically that paragraph of the letter should say, and if this kind of thing happens again in the future, it could be a violation of our dog ordinance. And and if it's referred to the select board, we may pursue it as a violation of the ordinance. So something like that rather than, it should be a recitation of what happened. So it's clear in the record that there's some facts there, that here's the rules around, the relevant rules around the dog ordinance, and here's what possibly could happen if it happens again. And so that way the letter serves as a clear warning that the next step after the letter is possible basically carrying out of the dog ordinance. That would be, in my mind, the right letter to send each of them.
I couldn't read the letter. I tried to open it, and apparently I need to have a Microsoft account in order to open it, and I had to sign in, which I don't have. So I haven't read the letter. So I don't know what it said.
It's the letter has, so half of the letter has the right stuff. So I think Emily's got, she recited the run at large language from the dog ordinance. I think that's good language to include.
If somebody could just give me the text of a letter in an email,
so that
I don't have to sign into, and I can read it myself, you know.
Okay. I mean, the letter should be here's what happened, here's the rules, and here's what could potentially happen if it happens again. That kind of thing.
Going forward, could we implement a letter so when people register their dogs that it could be like a friendly reminder, so that everybody that registers their dogs gets a reminder of this?
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, when Becky has a letter that she sends out along with the registration tags for licenses. And in that letter, she could certainly either, I don't think the ordinance is that long. She could either include a copy of the ordinance, or she could
just a reference to it,
a link in the letter to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be very helpful.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
So anyway, so how do we want to proceed? It's 2 weeks now since we got the complaint, or maybe it's four, I can't say. Do we want to,
I don't know. I kind of think that we could keep it simple. I remember about 35 years ago, I got a letter from Dorothy Moore saying, you have been shoveling snow out into the roadway and you must not do that anymore. So, and that kind of did the trick. So.
We could also not discuss the individual complaints, but write the letter to the three individuals whose dogs have been complained about, and say we have had complaints regarding your dogs, and then just go in with the dogs are running at large according to the dog ordinance, and that's unacceptable. The language that was in that letter that I sent to you all. So we could do that as well, and hope and make it a little more friendly, maybe, or a little less adversarial, and see how that flies. I didn't consider that, and mind you, I had called Jen and spoke to her regarding the dogs, and so we had a conversation, and I followed it up with a letter because I felt that that was important to document that conversation. The problem did go away, and the letter wasn't particularly, I didn't feel it was particularly confrontational. It just stated the facts. You know, if you've got all these clients with dogs up there, tell them to leave their dogs at home. We don't need them. So we can do that, or we can send individual letters to each of the individual dog owners and we can spell out the complaints. It's whatever the board prefers, but I think we should get some before much longer goes on. We should get some letter, and that's a board decision as to how detailed you wish the letter to be, or whether you want it to be more of a reminder letter. There is a leash law. If you have a menacing dog, you know, we can just do kind of a reminder letter, if that might hopefully do the trick, or would remind them that they are in violation if their dogs are out all day and no one is home.
I get a reminder letter. I mean, that's what I was getting at before. So,
yeah, my question to the rest of the board is, play out the scenario. If the same thing happens again, what would the board want to happen? Would the board want to give a second warning before instigating any sort of possible ordinance violation? Or, is the first one just sort of a slap on the wrist, and then they get another warning after that, and then after that, we go to
my thoughts are you send something similar out to what was sent to Jen, just as a friendly, neighborly reminder of, you know, hey, they really need to be in control, and you know, it's not acceptable type thing. And then the next letter that goes out is a little more, you know, you've obviously, you know, violated the dog ordinance, and here's what will happen next if it continues.
I mean, these people are all friends and neighbors. They're not adversaries.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, a friendly letter.
That's fine. I mean, I think what I'm hearing then is sort of you get two warnings, and after two warnings, then it gets serious.
Maybe.
Well, I would be hopeful that the first letter would hopefully forestall the need for a second warning.
Yeah.
I think that if indeed the dogs continue to be a problem, that a warning letter would not be enough. That you would have to call the individuals, sit down with them, with the select board or
over Zoom,
someone, or over Zoom or whatever, and say, we've got a problem here. How are you going to fix it? I don't want to particularly threaten to have the dog put away or anything of the sort. I think this is something that sometimes people just don't realize how obnoxious their pets can be, and how difficult it is for some people that don't like pets to run by a dog that looks menacing, even if he's the most friendly dog in the world. If his hair is up on the back of the neck and he's coming out in the road and barking at you, it gives you pause to run by him or walk by him comfortably. And we have an obligation as select board members to make the roads and the trails available to all who wish to use them, not just people that are in the safety of their car. And I think that if people have dogs they're not taking care of, it's their responsibility to be told, time to take care of your dog. And so I wouldn't go for two warning letters. I would hope the first one would do it, and if the first one didn't do it, then there'd have to be a sit-down of discussion as to how are we going to take care of this problem.
That's what I'm getting at, is that we're all friends and neighbors, and I think that a letter saying that there's been a bit of a problem, that should suffice. And I think I kind of assume that will take care of it. So I think we should do that and then see what happens from there.
That sounds fine. I I'm just trying to get some what our logic is here, whether we're kind of getting, you know, two strikes and third strike, we're going to take a harder look approach, or, you know, what. But it sounds like at a minimum, everybody gets a first strike, and it's just sort of a friendly
reach out. And again, you know, we do have to be careful about how we talk about the ordinance, because we can certainly say we have an ordinance and here's what it says. But in terms of making any kind of assertion that somebody is in violation of it, that we have to be very careful about.
Well, that's why I would prefer to have a more or less friendly letter to say, you know, this is a reminder letter. There is a dog ordinance. The roads are open to everyone. You know, we've had reports that your dog is menacing to runners or whatever. And there's a dog ordinance. Keep your dog under control at all times, and sure. And see if that doesn't work. And hopefully it will. I had the advantage with Jen Hewitt of knowing her quite well and kind of knowing what the situation was up there. I think in her particular instance, it gave her the reason and the sentiment to say to her clients, leave your friggin' dogs at home. That's just that the town is upset. They're having complaints. Don't bring your dogs to the stable. And so it kind of got her off the hook as well.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, that isn't the same situation. I think a friendly letter would do. Before we send a letter, do you want it to be circulated amongst us so that you can poke holes in it yet again?
Yeah, yes, please. I'd like to see what the next draft.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I haven't seen the first one, so I don't intend to poke holes in it. But,
I will try and work on it in the next day or two and send it around, and hopefully there can be some consensus as to send it to the three individuals.
Well, we'll just send the one that you sent to Jen.
Well, no, that was a little too Jen specific.
We'll
have to work
just
on that.
Sent around and see what you think of that one, because I took the references to Jen out and it doesn't have a name or anything on there, but that can be added for each person if we want to address it to them individually. And I will
that was seems a much more generic, John.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I did, and that seems much more generic, and I think that's the way it should be. We'll work on that. Maybe, John, you and I can work on that, and we can come up with something and ship it around in the next couple of days.
Yeah, John, I just looked at your letter, and that looks fine, actually. The only thing that we might want to record somewhere, whether it's in the letter or somewhere else, is precisely what happened so that we've got a reference point. You know, what
We have that in the recording of the last meeting.
Okay.
Or the meeting that we discussed it. Those incidents were all reported then. Weren't they, John?
I believe so. We'd have to look at the minutes.
Kathy spoke
There's
to the two issues.
There's also a letter I sent to you guys. So the letter that I sent in is also in the record, which says what happened.
Okay, perfect. So that's good. So that's our backup then. And then I think John's letter is fine.
Okay, so we'll get that worked up, and I'll send it around. I will send it around to you, or John will, before we send it to the three individuals, just to be sure everybody's still on board. Is that okay?
Looks good to me.
Okay. COVID-19 and select board meetings. I don't know whether there are larger social gatherings that are allowed now. I put this on there myself only because I was not clear as to whether we wanted to start thinking about having normal select board meetings, whether we could socially distance and have those at the town hall if we had internet service there, or if we wanted to just continue with Zoom. Any and all of those things are possibilities. And I was just looking for input.
Kind of depends on how many people might show up that are not select board members.
Right, that's the challenge.
Yeah.
The other thing that some entities have done is they have the meeting, their meetings, but they have them so that the public can participate by Zoom if they so choose. How that all works, I am unclear, but that's what I understand some are doing. I'm more than game to continue with Zoom for a while longer if that's what we choose to do. I just thought it was worth a discussion.
Could it be set up that select board members attend in person, but that the public is not welcome to attend in person?
Yeah,
that would be difficult, I think.
Right.
Well, I think maybe then till the unless the restrictions are eased more on public meetings or larger gatherings, that we should just continue on the way we have been doing. That seems to work fairly well, unless anybody has disagreement with that.
No, I think it's the simplest way.
Okay, that's fine. Any more discussion on that? Okay, Tego Store Project. I sent the plans from Mr. Warden to Rita Sato, who then sent them to the bike path and pedestrian specialist at VTrans. He has sent those back with some notations, and I sent those plans to you this evening. They're really on a computer, really too small to get to read legibly. I also asked, I believe Chris Bump got a copy of the plans and the letter that the pedestrian study individual sent back that I gave you the copy to. And Jimmy was going to ask VTrans if now that the restrictions are somewhat lifted, if they could come up and do a site visit regarding the curbing and what the people want to do there and how that's going to affect navigating those intersections with large trucks and trailers. And I don't know whether Jimmy made a connection with Chris Bump and or anyone else down there yesterday or today or not. I didn't ask him, but he was going to work on that. The pedestrian problem is one part of it as far as I'm concerned, but the traffic flow and tractor trailers and navigating the intersection is also another part, and that has to do with the curbing and things that they want. And so we're partway there, but we're not all the way there.
I mean, the comments, if I'm reading the correct one, the comments are all on the plan itself, which all seem
that is,
quite
they
minor.
They are all on the plan.
They had no issues that I can see with any of the actual design work down there. And although one needs to be cognizant of, yes, the designers of this are working for the private organization, Tego Store, one also has to remember that they are professional civil engineers, and this is what they do. And they also do, I'm sure, this type of consulting work for towns. So although it's important that, you know, we have our own people look at it.
Well, the difficulty with the individual that gave this, that looked over these plans, he is a bike path pedestrian specialist.
Yeah.
He isn't concerned with a tractor trailer getting around the end of the intersection.
Sure.
And so he was looking at it from a safety point of view as far as pedestrian traffic and crosswalks. And I think that if we could get some input from VTrans regarding the road itself and the navigation of the road itself for tractor trailers and that kind of thing to make those curves, then we'd be all set. And hopefully Jimmy can get that to come along.
Emily, this is Jim here. I did not get that done, but I will see to it first thing tomorrow morning. I put it together and send it out. My bad. I apologize.
Well, we'll get it done, we'll get it done, and it's no big deal. And I just got this letter back from the bike path guy late this afternoon, so it's not like we've been sitting on it. But I do think we'll have to we'll have to make a decision. But I'm not willing to necessarily give them their fence and the curbing and everything unless V-Trans looks at it and says, you know, it can't be right at the edge of the road. It's got to be in 4 feet or some other. You know, I don't know the ins and outs of all of that, but this guy wasn't doing that kind of an assessment. He was looking at pedestrian safety.
Yep. Hey, Emily, this is John.
Yes.
Could the town require the Artistry's engineer to run auto turn on those turns? That's what engineers do. They have a program called auto turn.
I don't know why we couldn't.
You know, it's the burden probably should be on them to show the town that it works, and then V-Trans could review that, you know.
Okay. That's a good suggestion.
But
yeah, that's a good idea, because one concern that I, after sitting down there, is for when the fire department comes out of the station, they can't go right over the bridge, so they have to go left. So if they had a call up Stage Road from when we were down there at our review, that curbing come out there quite a ways on that side, and that would make that turn almost impossible to come out of the fire station and then go right up Stage Road. So that John's point is a good one to take in. That should be taken into consideration there.
And there's different design vehicles they can run an auto turn. There's a WB67, which is like a long 53-foot tractor trailer all the way down to, you know, you could run a fire truck or whatever else. You know, the town asks a request of them.
Okay.
That's good information. So, thanks, John.
So if I were to write back to that engineer, I would ask him to do an auto turn analysis of it.
Yeah, that's what they typically do. There's a program called Auto Turn. It runs all the Ashto truck models. You know, they'll know what to do. It's pretty common. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
The other option for those that want to see something in person with a real vehicle is have them go down and put some paint on the road where the curbing is proposed to go, so we could all visualize it as well.
Okay, I could have them do that. So do you want me to ask him to run an auto turn analysis on it, and could he also please mark out with paint where the fence / curbing is actually going to be?
Yeah, I think so. Good. Yeah. He would have to do the first one to be able to do the second one, so I would think.
Okay, I will write him back an email and ask him to do that and explain that the pedestrian guru has looked at the plans and has a few questions and concerns, and that we're trying to get someone from V-Trans that's more associated with truck travel to come and look at it. And could he please put the markers, put paint strips down where he envisions that his curbing and fence will be? Does that sound reasonable?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Everybody in agreement with that?
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
Okay, then we've taken care of this. Policies and ordinances that need updating or creation. That was you, Scott.
Yeah, so we've got a number of policies that are gathering dust, and we've talked about over the past couple of years about making changes, and we just haven't done it. And so I just want to refresh our memories on those changes, but
we had a number of changes, some that were going to be around vacation and leave policy and some other things. I think Jim had some requests around the personnel policy too. So we have a number of personnel policy changes to make. We've got some updates on the pay policy. Our conflict of interest needs a couple of minor tweaks. Our emergency services policy needs updating. We've got a highway, basically we've got a combined highway policy and ordinance that needs to kind of be pulled apart. But there were some things around the access permits that needed to be updated, I recall. And Cy Benoit was working on a tree policy that we would make as part of our highway policy. We have some policies that we never adopted. We need a drug testing policy that I think VLCT, we were working on with VLCT, and I don't think we ever adopted one. And then, of course, recently we've been talking about establishing a compensation policy. So we've got a bunch of housekeeping to do. And so the main goal tonight was just to refresh everybody's memory on those. I don't know that we're ready tonight to talk about which of those that I just listed are the most important and we should address first. But maybe we do that at the next meeting, is take and refamiliarize ourselves with these policies and figure out which ones are the most important to get squared away. But you know, this is kind of this is important stuff to get updated. You know, policies get stale after a while, and we know that we have changes we need to make. We just need to get on top of it.
There was one policy that with your audit, and that's the wrong word, I apologize, but your audit with the FEMA stuff that you did a couple of years ago, which policy was that?
It's the conflict of interest policy that needs some language changes.
It would seem to me that if we were going to work on one, that would be because that was a red flag for them, and we have another FEMA grant / payment coming in on this storm that Neil worked on, that maybe changing that seemed to be a rather small change, as I recall. It was just a couple things that were worded incorrectly, that would be the first one to tackle, and then at least if they review us again, then at least we will have gotten that conflict of interest policy in sync with what they wanted to see.
Yeah, that one's a kind of low-hanging fruit. That one's pretty easy.
Well, let's tackle something easy first.
Well, there's some of the, I think the personnel policy is, in my opinion, probably the second, well, maybe the most important.
It very well may be the most important, but we seem to be getting these FEMA incidences on a regular basis, and it would seem to me that those changes, as I recall, were quite simple.
Yeah.
It would seem to me that we would tackle that, because it's already been pointed out to us that they did not find it in compliance, that we would at least, to make them happy, we would change it before they audit us again.
Right. And that's what I mean by low-hanging fruit. It's pretty easy one to tackle. But these other ones we should queue up and figure out how to tackle those as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, tonight is just a refresher on what those policies are. We can certainly deal with the conflict of interest policy next meeting. And I would suggest that we pick the next two to work on as well. We have been starting with the compensation policy, and maybe we should carry on with that one as well, in addition to the personnel policy.
Yeah, I was going to say the compensation policy and certainly making the changes to the personnel policy regarding that would be probably the next step.
Yep. Okay.
I think if you were to talk to the people at VLCT, they would urge you very strongly to adopt a policy with regard to the commercial driver's license stuff. They consider that a very important one. So that's where I'd put my vote.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be, should be relatively easy too. Most of that stuff, I mean, is fairly cut and dry. We just need to make sure it's correct. And
right. I think Frank had it almost there ready for adoption. So that one should be pretty close too. So why don't, I mean, we could probably tackle, I would, okay. So in thinking about this a little bit more, we could deal with the conflict of interest policy next, as Ellen is suggesting, our drug testing policy. And that one should be, I think, almost there and ready for adoption. And then the other two to tackle in would be the personnel policy and the compensation policy. And then the others, we can tackle those afterward.
Okay. Any other comments in this area? Okay, moving on to meeting wrap up. Select board correspondence. I have none other than the fact that I spoke earlier about VTrans not knowing when they would reimburse us for the paving grant. They don't know that because there's no budget yet. Also, I got a letter from the Better Roads Grants people. They have not awarded grants yet because, and they normally would have awarded them by now, because they don't know if they're going to have any money. The grant that, the work that we're going to do on Bunker Hill with that grant that comes through Two Rivers has been extended because we would not meet the, with the COVID-19, we could not meet the July 1 deadline. And so that deadline has been extended, and Jimmy will be working on that fairly soon. And other than that, I have no other correspondence other than on the TIGO thing.
I've got some correspondence to mention. We got a letter, or an email rather, from State of Vermont from in regard to DR FEMA declaration 4445. And basically it was about that. It was a email confirming that FEMA has obligated the money to the town, but in order for the state to start its subgrant process, we had to make a couple of compliance requirements. One of those is taking a survey on our financial control procedures, which I referred to Ellen. And then, and I don't know if Ellen, you have this as well, but we were also required to provide a copy of our certificate of liability insurance. But that those were the two requirements for the State of Vermont to start the subgrant agreement. So that's some important correspondence.
I forwarded that to Neil as well because he's been working on that. And any other correspondence? Review of assignments. Scott's going to come up with the conflict of interest changes that we need to make at the very least. I will deal with Warden and the auto turn, And John and I will get a letter together and circulate it, finish off that letter for the dogs. Steve, you're going to do the RFP?
I will.
And what other items?
Make those changes and get that right out.
I think that's it.
Okay. Agenda items for next meeting. I want to remind everyone that Jimmy has been now employed with us for about a year. We need to do a review with Jimmy, and I think that we should make a schedule to have a sit down with Jimmy it would be an executive session because it would be a personnel review. And I think with the social distancing and the fact that it would be an executive session meeting, not a regular meeting, so there would be no public involved, that we could have that conversation in the town hall or probably in the town offices and socially distance. And we should get that underway so that we can determine his review status. And you mentioned at the last meeting a raise for Jimmy, and we could take care of get a sense of what his performance has been, and then at the next regular meeting we could put on the agenda a possible pay increase for Jimmy if that's what we determine that we think we should do. So does anybody have any ideas to when they might like to meet with Jimmy, and or if indeed a face-to-face meeting is acceptable?
We can do the face-to-face thing since it's an executive session, but I think we first, in addition to Jim, Cynthia is also overdue for performance evaluation. But we should figure out before we do these executive sessions how we want to do the performance review. Do we want to have one combined agreed upon review from all five board members, or does each board member do their own review, and then that becomes, and we, because we've done it, how we've done it in the past, just as a reminder, is, and actually we've done it a few different ways, but as a board, the last time we did a review, the way we did it is that each board member provided his or her own comments, and that was how we did it. The alternative is we get together on our own without Jim, and then figure out if we have agreed upon input as five members and do it that way. So I think our options are individual comments or combined comments, but we should figure that out before we do the review.
Well, that's fine too, but I think, and I don't have any problems with however the board wishes to do the review, but we need to do a review. One of the things that has been dogging us is that we do not do things in a timely manner, and we get bogged down in the nitty-gritty details, and we need to get, he's up for his year anniversary. We need to get a review done. I find those pro forma documents where he meets expectations, above expectation on various things, are somewhat frustrating. Personally, I think Jimmy's doing an excellent job for us, and I think we, whether we do individual reviews or whether we do it collectively, I don't really care. We need to get it done. We need to do it.
I don't disagree, but we need to be in unison on what our approach is going to be, though.
Well, that's fine. Let's make a motion to how we want to do it, and then let's just get it done and not talk about it. And I don't care. We can do it any way the rest of the board wants to. My only goal is to get these things done in a timely fashion, however we wish to do them. And I'm willing to do it any way anybody wants to, or the board as a whole wants to. My only goal is to try and stay on track and get this review done in a timely manner, and then move on to the next review. Cindy's overdue. We'll do Cindy next.
Just as a reminder, though, we did vote several weeks ago to postpone all personnel reviews until after COVID-19 was over. So I understand your point that we need to get this done, Emily, but we did vote to put off personnel reviews until we're in the clear.
Unfortunately, COVID-19 isn't going to be over. From everything that I hear and everything that I read, COVID-19 is going to be with us for a while, quite a while.
Right.
And now that we can at least have an executive session and a sit down with Jimmy and maintain social distancing and do that in an appropriate fashion, I don't think there's any reason to not do that in an executive session and have a review with Jimmy. And then if indeed we determine that a raise is warranted or not, whatever, that is going to have to be in a public session, and that's perfectly fine to do over Zoom. But we need to have a sit down with Jimmy and all of our personnel. And right now there is no reason, given the fact that things have opened up enough so that we can do that with social distancing, masks, and whatever, there's no reason to prolong it any longer, regardless of what we said 2 or 3 weeks ago. Things are changing with this COVID thing rather rapidly, and things are opening up. I don't see any reason to delay it. But if the board wishes to delay it, that's okay, too. But we need to make a decision and then move on.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all, Emily. All I'm saying is that we're not all that late because we made a decision to postpone. That was my only point. So are we
bound by that vote now? Can we vote to rescind that vote?
I think we're about to do that. I think by virtue of deciding to do the review, it's not really rescinding, but we're basically choosing to do the review despite the circumstances, and that's fine. But my only point was that we knew his review was coming up a while ago, but due to the circumstances, we put it off intentionally. So we're not neglecting our responsibilities, is my point.
Well, but you're the legal expert. Are we bound by that vote not to deal with this?
We can always change direction, and I think we more or less are deciding to do that now.
Yeah, well, I think so too. So I mean, that's what I'm saying. Can we just, sure. Could I make a motion that we will address the compensation issue?
I don't think it requires a motion. I think by virtue of scheduling the executive session.
Okay.
We're deciding to do it. I think the only issue that I'm raising that needs a decision is what our approach is. Are we going to do individual? And I guess to Emily's point, I will make a motion that we do each board member provide their own separate comments for Jim's review and Cynthia's review.
Okay, based upon our executive session meeting with Jim.
Well, we would need to prepare the review ahead of the executive session.
Yeah, I was just going to say we should have, you know, a group review with potentially, you know, one set of, you know, review documents at the end, but we all need to come to the table with our own, you know, comments.
Right.
And just
it wouldn't be, we don't really have time now, but it wouldn't be a bad idea moving forward. It's part of all of this policy development and stuff, but come up with some, I know where I work, it's just some basic front and back of, you know, and everybody fills out the same thing. And so, you know, ahead of time, you know, it's got, you know, accomplishments that you've had, you know, goals that you felt you've achieved for both doing a self-review as well as, you know, your manager doing a review, which is us. And then it's also, when you have a manager, it's not a bad idea to get comments and thoughts from the people that they're managing, because they're the ones that are working, you know, for him all the time as well. So,
right. Yeah, good point.
So where does this leave us?
So do you want to do just an individual comment about Jimmy's performance, or do you want to have a 5-page review document such as what we have used in the past? And if you want to do the latter, then what document do you wish for us to fill out? I find those kind of annoying, but that's just a personal opinion. I feel that a written document as to what they have done and their strengths and if or they have weaknesses, their weaknesses is more valid than above or below expectations and that kind of thing. But that's just me personally, and I respect the board's decision to do whatever they want to do. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, the only thing, I don't disagree with you, Emily, but the only issue with that is that while the form may seem laborious, at least it's consistent and we'll all be using the same format. So I think it's more, I think it's important for us to all have a consistent framework in how we're writing our reviews. So in that regard, I would say it's better for us to use the form we have now and just use that as our framework.
All right.
I would agree with that too. And then,
And
then going forward, we could take John's recommendation and draft something that's a little bit simpler.
Yep.
So do you want to circulate that form around Scott, send it to all of us? And when would you like to, when in the future would you like to schedule an executive session? That being said, Jimmy has got to be consulted as when he is available to meet with us.
Yeah. I mean, I think unless we're going to do are we thinking we're going to do a special, you know, a special meeting for this?
I would do a special meeting just to meet with Jimmy, and then we'll continue on with the Zoom meetings, and but to meet with him and go over his evaluation, I think just do a special meeting, have it start at 7:00, and we'll just go for an hour, whatever it takes, and then we can. It won't be part of this Zoom thing. We'll have to open it as a public meeting, probably through Zoom, but it will be an executive session. Then
I would suggest having that executive session after our next regular meeting, just to give everybody some time to, and it's not just Jim, it's also Cynthia we would need to do, and give ourselves time to get the reviews prepared. And then do those reviews at the executive session after the next meeting. So maybe the thing to do is to have that executive session on the 24th of June. I'll just throw that out there.
Well, we We could do that. Why don't you send around the documents, and I will discuss. I will email Jimmy and see what his availability is on that week of the 22nd, and we can ask Cindy what her availability is as well, if you want to do them both on the same night.
Okay.
And then we can come up with a time frame. We can schedule a meeting via email or an executive session, a special meeting via email, with no legal issues regarding that at all. So why don't I check in with Jimmy and Cindy, and we'll come up with some possible dates, and then the rest of you all can make sure that you also are available. Sound reasonable?
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Okay. Then agenda items for next meeting. We still are there. Does anyone have anything other than what we've already discussed? Anything, anybody?
Not at this point.
Okay, then I would entertain a motion.
Make a motion, we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor, John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. We're done for the night. Thank you. John, before you leave Zoom meeting, before we have the next one, can you guide me at some point as to why I couldn't get on it with my computer?
Yep.
Okay.
There's a page on the website, the select board page, that the Zoom information isn't right. So I'll fix that tonight, and,
Okay.
I'll set up another meeting, and we can try getting you on, making sure it works.
Well, if you want, just set up a Zoom meeting between you and myself, just to see if I can get on. It doesn't have to be with the whole board. Sometime before the next meeting, give me the whatever, and then I'll be sure to get on. It really doesn't matter. I can stay on with the phone. It's easier for me to know who's there, but it doesn't really, I can do it by the phone just as well as not. It's just a little frustrating that I couldn't get there.
Yep. We'll get it figured out.
But as you well know, I'm technologically deficient.
And we miss seeing you, Emily.
Yeah, but I would have turned off the video anyway because I didn't want to break the machine, you know.
Have John help you get that camera on, too.
That's right.
No, I made a point of making sure it was off this last time. I will learn. I noticed we aren't seeing your shining face either.
I'm still learning as well.
Sure.
Have a good night, all.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thank you very much. Just set up a meeting sometime with me, John, once you get the correct link, and then if I still can't get on, we'll figure out what I'm doing wrong.